Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Valentine's Day is right around the corner, and store shelves will fill with piles of pink or red-wrapped chocolates of varying quality levels, and many will buy these gifts with little thought of where the cocoa beans used to make that chocolate came from. Well, if you ever wondered, you're about to hear a conversation with a woman whose life mission is to find those single-origin cocoa beans and make them into the purest expression of chocolate. Denise Castronovo makes artisan chocolate at her factory in Stuart, Florida, and has won numerous awards, including 6 of the 25 gold, silver, and bronze awards given at the 2016 World Finals of the International Chocolate Awards. And at the Academy of Chocolate Awards last year, Castronovo also took 6 of the top awards for Best Dark Chocolate Bean to Bar Under 80%. She will be in Naples this weekend for a sold-out presentation on her chocolate sourcing and production at the Wine Store in Naples. Full disclosure, the Wine Store is an underwriter to WGCU. Here is that conversation with Denise Castronovo. And because this segment of the show is pre-taped, we can't take calls, but do feel free to add your voice to our discussion via social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So you have a place in Stuart, Florida?
Yes, we have a small chocolate factory and retail store in Stuart, Florida.
Okay, so what attracted you to doing work with chocolate?
For me, it's sort of a second career. I am trained as an ecologist, and I did about 15 years of work in geospatial technology and mapping technology, and I had my own consulting business doing that, and I was really just looking for a change, and I got very interested in chocolate once I discovered all the different flavor notes that chocolate can have. And at the time, also, the craft chocolate industry in the U.S. was starting to develop, and there were plenty of people starting to make bean-to-bar chocolate. So for me, I thought, wow, no one's really doing this at all in Florida, and all of the different flavors and origins of chocolate were just really exciting to me. So I started making it from home.
For those who normally just, you know, will eat any chocolate that comes across their desk or area, tell me, what does bean to bar actually mean?
Well, bean to bar separates us from chocolatiers who basically work with a finished chocolate already and then make their wonderful bonbons or truffles from basically somebody else's chocolate. Bean to bar means we go directly back to the source and the origins of the cocoa beans and source our own cocoa beans and roast them and start making the chocolate right from the bean.
What does a cocoa bean look like?
It's about roughly the size of an almond, and it grows in a cocoa pod. So it is the seed of the cocoa pod. And there are about 30 to 40 seeds in a pod along with pulp. And the pulp in the cocoa pod is very, like, sweet and bright and fruity tasting, much like a lychee fruit.
Ooh, I do love lychees. So that pulp, is that ever used for anything, or do people just use that as just a regular a snacking fruit?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because people who are from cacao-growing countries say, oh, yeah, we would just open up the pods and suck on the seeds and, you know, eat all the pulp until our stomachs were full and then spit out all the seeds in the meantime. So children from cacao-growing countries love sucking on the seeds and love eating the pulp, whereas it's something that's so foreign to us, whereas chocolate to them is very foreign in its finished form, actually.
So to get a chocolate from a pulpless seed, then is that then toasted or roasted, or what happens to the cocoa bean, the seed?
Right. In the countries of origin, so they harvest the pods from the cocoa tree and then cut them open, often like with a machete or a sharp knife. And then they take the cocoa beans with the pulp around it and ferment them. So they're put into fermentation boxes. Some countries that don't have quite the facilities are just kind of fermenting the beans in like a pile under banana leaves. And that is the first development in the fine flavor of chocolate. So many cocoa beans on the commodity market are actually not fermented, but for fine flavor chocolate and the kind of chocolate that we're sourcing, it's a must.
What does fermentation do to the flavor of a cocoa bean?
Well, first of all, it takes out a lot of astringency and starts developing the precursor chocolate flavors. And then along the way, it can also provide some really nice, delicate floral or nutty or fruity flavors along with the chocolate flavor. And that is different for each origin and each bean varietal that we use.
And also the fermenting conditions, because if they're under a banana leaf, you can't really control the weather all that much. But it leads me to think about kind of the low and slow cooking style, you know? I mean, because fermentation makes things a little bit warm, so it's kind of maybe, is it making it a longer, slower intro to roast?
Yeah, it definitely is. And it starts building a little bit more of the chocolate flavor, and then and takes out some real bitterness, real astringency. Like an unfermented cocoa bean is almost metallic tasting.
And so then after the fermentation part, then what happens to it?
Then they're sun-dried, usually, out on these drying beds, and they're dried out in the sun, and it makes the shell dry up. And usually the husk on a cocoa bean is kind of thin and papery, but it is hard to peel until it is roasted. The shell doesn't come off that easily. So then they're sun-dried and put into jute sacks and sent for export most of the time.
So they're exported and then they're roasted wherever they're exported to, or is that sun what does the roasting?
No, yeah, we roast the beans here in-house at our factory.
It doesn't sound completely dissimilar to coffee beans.
Right, yes, I think it is. Has a lot of similarities in coffee, and a lot of the climate and the region where cocoa grows is also the same kind of terroir where coffee grows in many cases, although cocoa can also grow in lowland floodplains, whereas those environments you would not find coffee.
When you talk about terroir, it makes me think about wine growing regions and different varietals of wine. Are there different varieties of cocoa, or is it all one kind?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. In fact, as we're starting to learn more about the genetics of the cacao, which has happened fairly recently, they're finding that there are upwards of 30 different varieties of cacao. And before, it used to be lumped into sort of three general categories. And now they're finding amazing genetic diversity. And we really think a lot of that diversity imparts different flavor characteristics in the cocoa.
I hate to keep drawing these correlations between coffee, but it's kind of like the Arabica and Robusto, different camps in coffee. And then it seems like that's how cocoa had been classified up until this point. Have you been able to try different varieties of cocoa beans or roast them yourself and find out the differences between those flavors?
Oh, yeah. In fact, that's like one of the fun and exciting things that we do is we get different origins from Central America and Latin America. And I'm particularly interested in those areas because they tend to be locations where cacao originated. So inherently we'll have some of the most genetic diversity, and we're finding like really rare heirloom varieties of cocoa. And some of our chocolate that we make ends up having almost like a flavor journey. Like as the chocolate melts in your mouth, you get some fruity flavor notes, and then it changes to kind of like nutty, to caramel, to coffee. And then it's just like as it melts, like these different flavors evolve. And some of the more heirloom varieties will have like really nice delicate fruitiness to them, or really nice well-rounded like caramel and nuttiness to them.
I find that
it's not bitter.
I think it's really interesting, because now I'm drawing the correlations back over to the wine side, where it gets pretty complex too, and the tasting of wine. Is there a way to taste chocolate that you can access that whole spectrum of flavors that you're talking about? Because, you know, people drink wine, they try a sip of wine, and then they, you know, pass oxygen over it, and they talk about the mid palate, the finish. Is chocolate the same way?
Yeah. In fact, what you want to do when you try a piece of chocolate is, or a piece of fine chocolate anyway, is first smell it for the aroma, and that kind of opens up your taste buds for what's going to come next. And as you take a piece, you don't want to just kind of start chewing it. You just want to slowly, like, let it melt in your mouth, because chocolate melts very easily in your mouth. And the flavors can start to, like, evolve in a start, middle, and finish. And it's really lovely how it happens, too, because of the cocoa butter, the way it melts in your mouth just creates this wonderful silky feeling.
We're talking about Bean to Bar artisanal chocolate today on the show with Denise Castronovo of Castronovo Chocolate in Stuart, Florida. Because this segment of the show is pre-taped, we can't take calls, but feel free to add your voice to our discussion via social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. And I'm wondering, when a coffee bean is roasted, does that have an impact on how its end result is? Is there just a standard roast style, rate, and temperature, or can that be messed with or altered or tinkered with in a way to make the resulting cocoa different?
Yes, absolutely. Like, that's, you know, where the artisan chocolate maker really comes in. And you can have chocolate makers, several different chocolate makers, different factories using the same cocoa beans, and we come up with amazingly different chocolates in the end. And most of that is dedicated to how we roast it. And also in the way that you refine the chocolate, too. And so our chocolate is all stone ground, and as it's grinding, there's a lot of aromatics and strong flavors that come off, and we try to balance that and get out the more delicate flavors. So certainly, like, how you make the chocolate and process it and roast it all imparts different flavor characteristics.
What does it smell like when you're roasting cocoa beans? Because I know with coffee beans, it doesn't smell that fabulous. It's kind of a weird aroma that does not remind one of coffee so much. It's more like, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of like the smell of instant mashed potatoes before you've tried to make them into mashed potatoes with your hot water. You know what I'm talking about? Like that weird kind of, you know what I'm saying? Does cocoa have the same kind of impact on the nose as coffee does that way?
It can depend on the bean. Like, some of our cocoa, when it's roasting, will just smell like you're making a brownie. So it smells really, really fudgy and stuff. And then other beans have a little more astringency to them. So as it's roasting, you can get some very strong smells to the nose, actually, like, make you take a step back for a second. So it really can depend. And, like, most of these, like, volatile compounds come off, like, right away in the roast and when we first get it in the grinder. And when you walk in our small factory in Stuart, like, you're taken aback by the smell. You're not smelling, like, sugar or anything like that. You're smelling, like, a deep, roasty smell from the cocoa at our shop.
I would really like to make a trip over there just for that experience. And I'm wondering if there's kind of like a correlation. You said that this is your second career, but with your first career, you did a lot of mapping. And I'm wondering how that knowledge of mapping has influenced your selection with single origin cocoa.
Yeah, it's funny because now all of this is really starting to come full circle for me. The reason I started studying environmental science and ecology was a deep interest that I had for the rainforest and rainforest protection. And so now I'm realizing, you know, the more I work with cocoa and work in the origin countries, that we're really having an impact on rainforest conservation, because cocoa is one of the few crops that can grow under a rainforest canopy.
Mm-hmm.
And it can grow and be harvested sustainably. Like, you don't have to cut down the trees and you don't have to cut down rainforest to harvest it. And in Central and South America, many of our beans are coming from really remote virgin rainforest environments. And the people who are harvesting them, in often cases, are finding these cocoa beans in the wild, since harvesting cocoa is starting to become a little more popular, since the gourmet market is purchasing it. And it's really helping a lot of indigenous people make a commercial industry from, like, and start a career in something that they've never done before.
That doesn't seem to require as much. It doesn't require as much of a major investment to get that business started.
A little bit. Like, they definitely need training and expertise on the fermenting. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times there's exporters that are interested in helping them get started. So they'll help them build fermentation facilities and help teach them how to ferment it properly so it can actually be sold on the gourmet market.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is, you know, some knowledge transfer that has to happen there. And in many of our countries, there's people, you know, helping them get started, helping them get the facilities going, and then teaching them so they're able to run it themselves.
So I'm wondering, where would somebody start if they wanted to start to get to know? I mean, they've been, you know, for example, if they've been living on, you know, the Halloween handout kind of chocolate all their lives, where do they get started to start trying to learn more about single origin chocolates like that? Where would be an origin that they should check out first, so that they don't go immediately to an incredibly strong and super bitter type of a chocolate that might be too much?
Yeah, I would say if one that might be most accessible is Venezuela as an origin. Venezuela has a deep history in chocolate and also in preparing it and properly fermenting it. And so many European countries or European chocolate companies have used Venezuelan cacao for a long time. So that's probably one of the oldest origins. But like some origins like Peru, they can be sometimes a little more stringent and fruit forward. So it might be a little more difficult one to try as your first.
Yeah.
But some of the origins that we really like are Belize is wonderful. Like, it has a nice balance of the fruit, the chocolate, and the nuttiness.
This kind of seems a little like an odd question, but is there a thing that you just cannot stomach in chocolate? Because I've talked to people in the chocolate industry before, and the thing that they all just run from is something like white chocolate. Does that drive you insane?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
One of our most popular chocolates is a white chocolate, actually.
I've been in situations where people say, oh, white chocolate isn't even chocolate anyway.
Well, that's because a lot of white chocolate on the market is not. But the white chocolate actually comes in its pure form. It should be made with cocoa butter, sugar, and milk. And cocoa butter is the oil of the cocoa bean. So a cocoa bean roughly has about 50% cocoa solids and 50% cocoa oil or cocoa butter. And so we make a very pure white chocolate in-house with cocoa butter, milk, and organic sugar. And we like to flavor our white chocolate when we make it. Sometimes we'll make pure, like, white chocolate Easter bunnies, but otherwise, one of our most popular concoctions is a white chocolate with lemon oil and a lemon sea salt on the back. And it's a favorite bar by many people who think they don't like white chocolate, and then they try it.
You know, it's my guilty pleasure. I do love good white chocolate, so I'll be right over. No, I'm just kidding. You kind of serve as a bit of an ambassador, too, because you speak a lot about single origin chocolates and about the gourmet chocolate world. And you take your show. You're going to be in Naples later this week.
Yes.
So you're kind of spreading
Naples,
the good word.
We'll be spreading the good word and introducing wine connoisseurs to fine chocolate. And we'll be doing a wine and chocolate pairing and making a lot of parallels, actually, to wines with how you go about tasting fine flavor chocolate.
Yeah, that's kind of immediately where my mind went when you were talking about the tasting notes and the different descriptors and the different terroir and now varietals, too, being part of the mix. I think there are a lot of correlations there. So I think it's a pretty interesting field of study that you've chosen for your second career.
Yeah, and there's also a conservation aspect to it, too, because some of these more heirloom varieties of cocoa are somewhat endangered, too, by large industry trying to make hybrid varietals of cocoa without even considering flavor characteristics at all and just considering, you know, productivity. So there's a lot of information I think that needs to get out that not all chocolate does taste the same, and these unique flavor characteristics are really something to treasure.
Yeah, it sounds like it's something that's worth preserving, and I'm wondering how close it was to the brink of non-existence.
They say that these fine flavor varietals are about 5% of the chocolate production worldwide, so it's small. And in some cases, they're actually finding these varietals because years ago, like in places like Colombia, there was a lot of cacao planted, and then it was just left in the woods as they went to plant other crops. And now they're going back and finding some of these varietals are still there in the woods and have actually become more unique, you know, as they're growing amongst themselves over centuries, just having been left sort of in the wild.
Kind of natural hybrids of one another or different crosses. It's interesting,
yeah,
I'm sure.
So now the thing to do, yeah, like when you're trying to produce cacao from those regions, is you want to graft the trees from that area rather than introduce new genetics to the area, because what they're finding in Colombia now is that there's all kinds of specialty cocos that are growing and have been kind of crops that were left in the woods and nobody needed them at the time. But now, you know, there's a resurging interest in them.
And a lot of it, like you mentioned earlier, isn't done. They're growing in such remote regions. And in different places where with indigenous cultures that may or may not have a whole lot of contact with business interests like, for example, yours, that would be interested in importing it from their area. So it sounds like it's kind of on the cusp of some great exploration.
Yeah, it certainly is. And one of the exciting things, too, is then to go back to the origin and allow the local people to actually try it as a finished chocolate, because sometimes they'll just eat the seeds or maybe in some areas grind it into a drinking chocolate, but usually that's something like without sugar and it tastes nothing like a fine gourmet chocolate.
How do people respond when they're first exposed to what you're talking about, when they first start learning about this? Are people surprised, or are you finding that people are somewhat educated?
Like customers, you mean?
Yeah, when you're presenting this information and you're presenting these stories, do people nod with knowledge, or they're just completely blown away?
A lot of people are like, wow, I just had no idea like that chocolate could be so complex and interesting. And we've had wine and chocolate events before where a lot of people, especially the men, come say, I came for the wine. My wife kind of dragged me along, but I left like knowing far more about chocolate than I had ever imagined. So it's always some people, you just have no idea, and they really don't even realize that, you know, the chocolate they eat is a crop, that it comes from a tree.
I really appreciate your time talking with me about all this.
Thank you.
That was Denise Castronovo of Castronovo Chocolates, and while she is coming to town this weekend for an event, it is sold out at this point. For more on Denise, be sure to check out GulfCoastLive.org for more information. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary, John Davis, and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.